Welcome to the broadcast.
Every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
Thanks for tuning in.
It's Rosie on the House. Your weekend wake-up tradition.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow.
Come on around back, Arizona. It is Saturday morning, 8 o'clock. It's Rosie on the House, your outdoor living hour, and it is the third Saturday of the month. We've got Jay Harper in talking this month, if you're following along in your home maintenance calendar, winter lawn transition. And if you'd like to join the conversation and ask your question about your landscape or garden, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Text questions can be sent to 411-923, or you can email us at info@rosieonthehouse.com. And we've got the winter lawn transition, but you know, we may be a little early. Mine's beautiful. We've got a nice, cool, mellow temperature down a few degrees from previous weeks. I'm hoping to get another 4 to 6 weeks out of mine.
Well, it kind of depends on what your plans are. I was thinking about this yesterday when I saw that, you know, kind of looked again at the topic. And so if I'm having a graduation party in maybe mid-May or sometime in May, or a wedding or a, you know, something like that, I'm probably trying to keep that winter lawn going, like you said, another 4 to 6 weeks. Well, how do we do that? We're probably going to have to kick the water up. You know, it's still a little bit on the warm side for winter lawns to, you know, they need some adjustment. So mid-90s, they probably need a little more water than you were watering them earlier in the winter. Maybe raise the mowing height. Don't mow it quite so short. Feed it one more time. That'd probably stretch you out, you know, until you need to be. If, however, you don't have any reason for your lawn to look magnificent through May, I would begin the process. I would kind of do the opposite. I would not increase the watering. I would kind of hold it at what it is. I wouldn't turn it off, but I would just not give any extra water. I would probably start the process of lowering my mowing heights a little bit. So that, you know, sometime along about Mother's Day, when we very typically get maybe that first few 100-degree days in a row, you know, knock on wood, maybe we won't.
it's been a pretty nice spring.
It has.
I'll take this spring. I remember a lot of 100-degree marches.
Oh, absolutely.
This has been a nice spring.
And when it does that, it forces the trend. You don't have much choice. That ryegrass starts pooping out, and there really isn't much you can do. But, you know, we have been fortunate. We could have used a fair amount more moisture. But temperature-wise, this is pretty ideal growing conditions for, you know, ryegrass, other than it needs a little more water than it did. You know, it was mid-50s on my way in here this morning. Mm-hmm. So Bermuda really doesn't start cranking until those lows get, you know, in the mid-60s. So we got a ways to go from that standpoint. I would kind of just play it by ear, depending on what you're going to do. But it's certainly not too early. And really, if you're going to transition it, you want to start earlier rather than later. Unless, like I said, you've got 50 people coming in your backyard, you know, sometime in May for Mother's Day or graduation, then you probably want to keep it going a little bit longer. The problem with stretching it out into May and June is that if we let that ryegrass hang on, which invariably it seems to these days, you know, the dormant Bermuda can only stay alive for so long, or dormant for so long, before it starts dying. And then typically the scenario is we get into about late June or early July, and we have those first influx of kind of tropical moisture, and the nighttime temperatures don't cool off, you know, and we have those hot nights or warm nights, and boom, the ryegrass dies, and people think they're like, my lawn's dead. Well, yeah, the ryegrass finally died. And the problem is then there's no underlying Bermuda that's still viable. It has to start filling in from places that are, and it can be a pretty ugly, long, drawn-out process if you let it kind of happen that way. So whether you do it, start doing it now or sometime get through your holiday parties, your graduation parties in May and start doing it then, the earlier you can push that ryegrass out, the better off you're going to be come, you know, end of June, early July with having some Bermuda that's coming back at a rapid rate. So that's, you know, this is also a great time. Part of the transition would be checking your irrigation system. You know, hasn't been that critical all winter. So you want to make sure that, you know, the heads are popping up and spraying where they should be spraying and they're in good working order. You know, you don't have breaks and leaks and, you know, all those kinds of things, because it's, you know, it's kind of like waiting till it rains to check your roof or waiting till it's 100 degrees to check your sprinkler system is about the same results. And, you know, not quite as devastating economically, but it could be. You know, you lose a couple of big mature trees or half your lawn because your irrigation system's not working right. And we tend to be creatures of convenience, right? So we have this timer that sits out there somewhere and, you know, we just think that takes care of everything. Well, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And even if they're working, if the underground piping and the delivery mechanisms aren't working properly, you know, then you're going to have a problem. So, you know, it's amazing how many people don't know how to run their own irrigation controller. That'd be the first thing I'd do is learn how to do that yourself.
Now, we've talked about aerating and dethatching, and it seems like the best practice for that has changed over the last decade or so.
Well, it's certainly great things to do. I mean, dethatching maybe doesn't need to be done every year, but we used to see people do a lot of dethatching when they put their winter lawns in the fall. And we've come to kind of realize that's not such a great idea. you don't want to damage that Bermuda grass or warm season grass right before it wants to go dormant. It needs to be storing up nutrients, carbohydrates, those types of things going into the dormant season. So we want to disrupt it as little as possible. In fact, we don't recommend even scalping as severely as we did way back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Man, get it right down to the dirt, you know, get it as low as you can get it. Do as minimal amount that you can get away with and still get the seed to get down and make contact with the ground. Dethatching should be done when the Bermuda grass has started to grow on an active basis. So again, watch those nighttime temperatures. When we're in those mid-60s and above, then you're pretty safe to go in and dethatch. In fact, dethatching is a great way to help as part of your transition. You know, mow it shorter, dethatch it, get some of that ryegrass, get the thatch opened up, get the canopy opened up so sunlight and warmth can make its way down to the roots and the stolons and the rhizomes and get that grass really starting, that Bermuda grass start to cranking. And aerating, you could kind of do any time. Certainly going into the warm season is a great time to do it because that's when we need to make sure water is getting some penetration and we're getting some of the soil opened up. So the problem with aerifying is that for a homeowner, that piece of equipment is very, very heavy. It has to be, you know, to drive those cores, those hollow cores into the ground deep enough to pop a core out. So it's something that you kind of, you know, they generally, if you rent them, they come on a little trailer. You have to be able to pull it. You're not going to lift it up and put it in your trunk, I can tell you that. So great idea to do those in combination if you've got three or four guys in the neighborhood or gals in the neighborhood that you are friendly with. Kind of get together and do it all at one time, you know, and help each other out and knock them out. It's, you know, it's not a hard thing to do. It's just like walking behind a lawnmower. On either one, the cleanup after dethatching can be, a little bit of work depending on how long it's been since you dethatched and how aggressive you are with the dethatchers. In either case, again, getting back to that irrigation system, make sure you mark with a flag or a stake or something every one of your sprinkler heads.
You can go over a sprinkler head with a mower if it's set right, but not a dethatcher.
Yeah, no, dethatcher or a core aerifier will just destroy a sprinkler head pretty quick.
We have a texter that did not plant a winter lawn, only has Bermuda, and wants to know what if there's any special prep they need to do to jumpstart the growing season.
Well, you can't do what you can't do. It's temperature driven. But once you see it starting to green up, you know, again, start applying some water on a regular basis. It doesn't need it that much now, but it needs some. When it starts to get fairly green, get some fertilizer on it and start your summer feeding program. Once it gets going, then dethatching, aerifying, those would be great things to do. We're probably still maybe a month away from that. Bermuda's probably greening up a little bit, though. But, yeah, there's no sense fertilizing if it's not actively growing. But once you start to see green up, start hitting it.
John, in that scenario where we're just bringing the dormant Bermuda back, when can I hit it with pre-emergent? Because the Poana and the Spurge is going to come in right with the Bermuda, right?
Yep.
When can I pre-emergent?
You can pre-emergent anytime. You know, pre-emergent can
that
be done.
That won't hurt the Bermuda coming in.
No. Okay. Only unless you're trying to the one caveat to that is if you have a common Bermuda lawn and you might be thinking about having to reseed some areas, you don't want to do it before you do that. But pre-emergent, we generally, if you were going to pick times, first part of spring, early fall. You know, that way you catch, you know, the winter weeds by a fall application, and you catch the spurge and the warm season weeds by a spring application. You're going to get 3 to 6 months out of a pre-emergent application, depending on how much you water and how heavy you apply it.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation.